Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
Good Friday morning, everybody. John and Lance along with Aaron, and off we go. 713-780-3776. Glad you could join us this morning. The big news, I guess, around here, I guess, Rockets lost again last night. They lost to the misogynistic Suns, 123-111.
The Phoenix Misogynists?
Yeah.
Is that the name of the team?
That's their new name, the Phoenix
Misogynists. Well, now you're going to have to go into a whole thing about explaining that.
Well, their owner is under investigation.
I tell you what, ESPN was able to rally an entire day of coverage around the breaking story that they broke.
Yeah.
And like, we're going to break this, and then we're going to cover this with our TV. Like, that was already set up to cover.
What is amazing is that your league and your commissioner has been able to cover up this Redskins deal. Football team.
Whoa.
Thing. All right. This Washington football team.
It's been good being here, guys.
You guys have been able to sweep this under the rug.
It's not what we're doing.
For as long as you have.
And we're
the
not
only
sweeping
one
anything.
Out of the Washington football team investigation that's been fired is John Gruden.
Yeah.
Well,
He deserved it.
Yeah. No. There's no,
and he wasn't even with a team at that time.
No, he's never been with a team. What do you mean? He's never been with a team.
He was no. He wasn't even in the league.
Yeah, right.
At that time,
I mean, so,
he was like, here's what I do agree with. Everyone wants to make the league said we gave people for everyone to speak clearly, openly, and honestly. They're trying to protect everyone's, you know, they're basically saying we're giving you the opportunity to speak and we will keep you anonymous. I mean, we'll protect your identity, but we want you to tell everything.
With immunity?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Like the Astros. Yeah.
Yeah. And now people are, release them. And the league's like, no. We're not going to. We don't have to.
Well,
we're not going to.
The only thing they released was John Gruden?
I guess they haven't found other stuff. I don't know. I mean,
okay, a full investigation into that.
I don't think they're done.
Another misogynistic organization, and they haven't found anything.
That says you. You know what?
Wow.
Just point your eyes.
You know what would happen if my commissioner,
do me a favor,
if The Rock was in charge of this?
Our stuff is taking.
He would have not only found him guilty, he'd have put him in the ring started pounding their
Rock bottom?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He would have crushed
giving
him.
Giving people a people's eyebrow?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care what your name is. And crushed him.
Yeah, that's exactly what he would have done.
That's what he does.
Listen, you pay attention to Robert Sarver's misgivings. Don't, or misdeeds. Stop paying attention. Stop trying to get into our business in the NFL. You deal with what's in front of you right now, and that's Robert Sarver and his toxic culture and behavior and what he's done in Phoenix to hurt people. Don't you get into our business. We're looking into everything.
The show before Jay Williams brought, well, what about Donald Sterling? You know, he had all this evidence against him. How is this going to go, Woj, with Sarver? I mean, I don't know that there's any conversations with him dropping N-bombs on anybody. I'm not sure.
There is. I guess you didn't read the article. He used it like a lot of people like to try to push the envelope and use it to say Draymond Green said this, or this is what he's alleged, accused of. His lawyers say it didn't happen. There's one person, Earl Watson, who was his coach, who says this. So it's he said, although there are other people who are unnamed who said they've heard him say stuff where he uses it not as a slur, but as
just in conversation,
as a
conversationally?
Word, not even conversationally, like this person said this.
So
why
he's quoting
this?
Someone.
It was Draymond Green. Do we have a sound on it?
No. When he said it, he's been quoting someone.
Right.
Yeah. He quoted Draymond Green. He was really upset that Draymond Green, that one of his players got a technical, but Draymond had said it earlier, and he went to Earl Watson and said, "How come he can say N-word and we get in trouble when we say it?" And Earl Watson, according to Earl Watson, Earl goes, "Whoa, you're not supposed to say that word. Why not? Why can't I say N-word?" When he said it, why can't I say it to say what he's saying? You know, it was the whole quote thing. But So that's just one of many things, though, apparently. Sarver also, you know, if it were just that, you'd say, but yeah. But there's a lot more in the article. It was a long article.
I'm sure. Well, I'm not sure of anything. I don't know.
It dates way back.
In that use, in that context, it's questionable.
But the misogyny, I read all the racial stuff. Some of it was like, oh, this one's a reach about. He said the word black players way a lot. Like, what? Some of it was like, I don't know, kids. We're trying really hard on this one. The misogynistic stuff, though, it was. He commented on this. He's showing his wife
passing
in a bikini
around pictures of his wife
said,
in a bikini.
Hey,
and stuff,
she gives me these things sometimes. She does this to me. Oh. And everyone's like, hey, I'm just trying to sell tickets. I'm trying to sell tickets to a poor product at that time.
But he was talking about his own wife.
Yeah, people don't want to hear about your wife, you know, doing that stuff. You don't want to hear that.
No, well.
People don't want to do that.
We're in an audio medium there, Lance.
Yeah,
right?
No, exactly. That's why I did that.
I hope the people on Twitch know what you're saying.
There's not a lot of Twitchers on right now.
If you're not on Twitch, you don't know what Lance just did.
Yeah, but that's what Sarver was doing, apparently, you know, allegedly. So, yeah, so the Phoenix, that's why John's calling them the Phoenix misogynists, and they beat our Houston Rockets.
Our good guys. The Houston,
yeah, the good guys. The guys trying to do it the right way. And right. When I say right way, 1-7.
Is it 7 or 1-8? Now? 1-7, yeah. 0-5 on the road. 1-7 overall. You know, Jalen Green is really, really, really up and down. 3 for 14, 2 for 7 from 3. 3 assists, 2 turnovers. You know, Kevin Porter Jr. is also pretty up and down. Christian Wood is not having a great year. 6 of 15 last night, 2 of 6. He did have 15 rebounds. Şengün is forced into this situation because of the injury to Daniel Theis. Mm-hmm. And so he's got to play 8 and heads up. And he's trying to hold his own, but he's the first time in the league, and you know that's not going to be.
It's still there's a little bit of a concern about his athletic ability as it pertains to matching up with bigs in the league.
Yeah,
I don't think that's going to be answered this year. I mean, it's worth noting, you know, he's a very, very talented passer. I don't think he's going to be a great rebounder, which is, you know, Scola was never a great rebounder. Another guy who was a very average athlete, but ended up being a pretty good player. But Scola was not a big boards guy yesterday. Şengün in 23 minutes had 4 boards, 5 assists, but he was also minus 19. But I thought it would be more fun early on. I thought we were
a
sold
wild
a lot
and
of
out of control.
We were sold
is.
A lot of fun, and what it is, that's what it is. Yeah. The basketball is not fun. It's frenetic.
Yes, yes.
It's frantic. It's all the S. Frantic, frenetic,
yeah.
But not fun. No. That's not the F word that I'm thinking of right now. It has the potential, and there's some athletic moments. But, you know, this is a team that their best young talent, or at least the most exciting young talent, Jalen Green, you talk about him being up and down. He's had 2 games where he shot the ball well and was, you know, and it was exciting times for him. But other than that, here's his field goal percentage last 5. I was going to say field goal percentage. 21.4, 60, 25, 18.8, 25. Like, I'm just happy when he hits 35% right now.
From the field.
From the field. obviously, from three-point line, 28, 50, 0, 0, 22. It's the game where he shot 60% from the field. You didn't mention that he had 7 turnovers. With 5 assists. I mean, this is definitely learning curve. He's a young player who played in the G League, and instead of being brought along, just think about this. If Jalen Green were playing on a regular team, one that's not, you know, rock bottom, just trying to completely rebuild, he'd be brought along as a guy off the bench. He'd probably be the sixth or seventh, probably the seventh man. There'd be a veteran who'd be the sixth man. He'd be the seventh man. Let's say he was coming in. Let's say the James Harden Rockets. He'd be the seventh or eighth player who would give you flashes, and if it wasn't going well for him, he'd get 12 minutes that game, and that'd be it.
Yeah, yeah. You know who's been playing well, but he's – I don't know. You know, you just get I guess if you're a coach, a lot of times, well, this guy is limited, this guy is this, this guy is this, this guy is – Kenyon Martin Jr.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what he's shooting this year?
He's shooting well.
73%.
Oh, that's higher than I would have thought.
73%.
He's more in control than...
He's been 6 of 8 a couple of games, 2 for 2 last night, 2 for 4, 3 for 4.
I'm a firm believer in this. This idea, and I didn't like it, and I don't like it, because neither one of them are point guards or even lead guards. Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green together is just not going to work. And I want it to, and I'll be more than happy to be wrong on that, but I'm just going to say right now that my prediction is this is really not going to work. They need a guy who is an actual point guard, not a lead guard. They need somebody who can manage the court and manage a game. Because if you don't, it's just a wild frenzy out on the court right now with the Rockets.
And now what you – like for example, now Chris Paul's a Hall of Famer. Chris Paul's one of the best point guards ever. Chris Paul is
– yeah.
You know, it's a different – but look at Chris Paul last night. He didn't shoot well. He was, I don't know, 3 for 10 or something. But he had 13 assists. He facilitates. He gets guys the ball in the right spot. Who's doing that for the Rockets?
Well, no, and the Rockets haven't had a true – I mean, their facilitator was the guy who was the lead guard, James Harden, who actually could facilitate, but he did it secondarily. It was his look first, and then he would set others up with maybe drive and dish. And it worked.
Yeah.
And it was successful because he's an elite, elite Hall of Fame caliber player.
Well,
we take that for granted.
Yeah.
But that's what he was. Guess what? That methodology, Steph Curry, when we're talking about the best of the best, Ja Morant, truth be told, you're right. They need a real point guard. They need somebody who's not.
They don't have any. They don't have a point
guard. No, they don't have a point guard. And it's not. And Kevin Porter Jr. And at some point, they're going to have to get some veterans on the team, some guys who have a chance to calm this thing down. Or Steven Silas is going to find that he'll be out by the end of the second year.
Yeah.
That's what will happen because Tillman's going to be like, this is not. Yeah, this is not happening the way we thought.
You know, not a bad idea. Start DJ Augustine.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't have a problem with it. That's a veteran point guard.
He had 3 assists last night in 12 minutes. He's right. That is a veteran point guard that actually can. You got to split up Kevin Porter. It's like two wild kids that you got to split them. Okay, you two can't be together anymore. Okay, we can't have you two together anymore.
That's right.
You go over there in that corner and you go play in that corner because you two are trouble together. And it looks like it's almost identical games.
K-Mac, Green. K-Mac, exactly. Right. And that's why they're too similar. They're too out of control. K-Mac says, I've watched every Rocket game this year and last. I don't think Silas is the right coach. They could use a Van Gundy to teach these guys. Yeah, that ain't going to work. They could use a Van Gundy to teach these guys what it takes to be a pro. Also, Green is stuck in the corner way too often. This offensive design is a disaster. I agree. Trade KPJ at some point for a true point guard. And look, the answers here, we're talking a lot of Rockets. We haven't talked about them for a while, but it's going to be time to start talking some Rockets. This is not going to happen in 1 year. I know that everyone doesn't want to go through the rebuild, but look how long it took for the Astros.
Yeah,
it's a long process. Yeah,
yeah. I said this on the Blitz months ago. This is the Astros rebuild. Enjoy $5 tickets to get in and watch, you know, some fun.
Yeah, because look
players.
How long the Astros took. I mean, you had George Springer coming up, and then you had
Drafted them up until they were good.
Right, exactly. And then you had Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers drafted in the same draft, right. And then you had Altuve was up, but then you drafted Bregman, and it's going to take. And hey, you're going to be bad this year. Guess what, John? You're gonna get a high pick again.
Well, let's talk to a guy who's got a good team, and that's Jean-Clay Wolfe. He's got a pretty damn good team up there with the Mavericks. Luka, is Luka your hero up there?
Luka's good. Good morning, and the Cowboys are pretty good. The Texans are not so good this year. I noticed you haven't called me in a while. Is it just because you didn't want to hear it?
No, I saw you. Who did you take a picture with that I saw? Who were you with?
Breaking
Bad?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Bryan Cranston?
Yeah. Was that really Bryan Cranston?
Of course.
No, it wasn't.
And that was LeBron James right in front of me.
It was the guy who looked like him.
I was watching the Astros, I mean, not the Astros, the Rockets in L.A. on Tuesday at the Staples.
Yeah, that's not fun. Well, it is.
It's
kind of a fun team.
They
go up and down. Yeah, they go up and down the court, and they throw the ball all over the place. That's fun. I mean, I would imagine it was fun for the Lakers fans because they got a win finally. They actually got a win over somebody.
I want to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
So, with the Lakers as stacked as they are, I mean, it's like the Emmy Awards of basketball. Looking at these guys, I mean, Westbrook, LeBron, I mean, it just goes on and on. And your boy, what's his name?
Anthony Davis.
Y'all dress alike, by the way. But why don't the Lakers kill everybody with the stack that they've got? Is it just because they're too old?
Well, yeah. It's like, what are those old movies with De Niro? You know, what's that movie with Sylvester Stallone and they're all in a...
Rocky!
No. They're all old people.
Motorcycle guys.
Yeah. I mean, it's
old dog.
You know, and this is a great team. Charles Barkley put it great. This is a great team in 2011. Today, not so much. So, you know, that's the problem. What were you doing in L.A. anyway?
Just work. I mean, Give Me the Vin in L.A. has been really growing a lot, and I go out there every 2 weeks, and it's just as important as Texas right now. Too.
You're almost,
it's wild how much it's grown.
You're you and Pelosi hanging out. You and all the lefties over there.
The people in California, in southern, like Orange County, are just like us. The people in like L.A. in the entertainment business are what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They're two different cuts. It's like Houston. There's two different sides of the tracks, and those people that we hate in California, you just don't go up there.
You just don't go near them. You know what you do, though? You go to GiveMeTheVin.com. Sell him your car because he will pay you more. He promises. Houston's one of his best markets ever. And he'll be on tomorrow morning for four. How many hours is your show? 4 hours?
4 hours on that station, yeah. We're on 55 stations out around the country, and it's 6 hours in the whole thing, and y'all carry four of it.
All right, that's Jim. It's the longest running show on ESPN 97.5. It's GiveMeTheVin.com. That's GiveMeTheVin.com.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Twitch can see you, okay? If you're not on Twitch, you're missing some stuff that Lance does. 713-780-3776. Greg Cosell joins us bottom of the hour here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I think the biggest story, yes, I don't know how big it is, but here, the biggest story yesterday coming out of the Texans was that Tyrod Taylor is going to start a quarterback, which is nice. Now, I've already made I made my picks, and I can change them. I keep going back and forth. But I think Tyrod Taylor changes my thought on the Texans game against the Dolphins. Plus 6.5.
Uh-huh.
Tyrod Taylor is Davis Mills on the road has been an unmitigated disaster. Tyrod Taylor now brings you know what? That may be – I think I'm liking the 6.5 now.
He hasn't played for a while.
Yeah, but –
you know, that's the flip side is we worry about
he always people. Does that, though. He hadn't played in 3 years, and he played really well.
When a team gets like 5 days – when it's playoff time and a team has a bye week, we worry about they're going to be rusty. They have a bye week. But when, you know, when they head into the playoffs, but then when a quarterback's out for 5 weeks, they're like, he's
listen,
back.
Let me
he's going to be
this.
Rusty, too.
Would you rather have Tyrod Taylor on 5 weeks rest or Davis Mills playing every week?
No, Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, here's a great example. I'll give you a great example that we've seen just recently, very recently. Davis Mills, right? He had a couple flashy moments, but for the most part, it's been a bunch of checkdowns, and he'll throw 37 times for 140 yards, stuff like that. That's what Justin Fields is going through, too.
Yeah.
Just crazy low. But the guy that also has had that issue is Zach Wilson. And so the last two games, you have Mike White, who I wrote up coming out of Western Kentucky. Mike White is a big arm guy. He's nothing. I don't think he's anything special, but he had over 400 yards passing and four touchdowns in the Jets win a couple weeks ago. And New York literally went crazy over Mike White. That's all they were talking about on the broadcast last night.
I got a buddy that's Jets. Ian is a Jets fan. He's like, it's Mike Evan White season.
They literally just traded. They literally just drafted Zach Wilson.
It's the, such a
who's hurt, and the backup immediately was in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He did something that no other quarterback had done, which is the, you know, I guess a first start, and he gets 400 yards, four touchdowns. So then he gets hurt yesterday in the Colts game.
Of course he did.
Josh Johnson comes in the second quarter. He ends up with over 300 yards passing and three touchdowns. And so Josh Johnson has played, as Troy Aikman said, there's probably never been anyone who's been in the league longer who played less than Josh Johnson. You know, he's been a second but mostly third teamer his whole career. Well, Josh Johnson has been around, though, and he plays better than Zach Wilson. So that's the point. rookie quarterbacks, a lot of times veterans just know the game better and they're just going to play better. And so when you look at, you know, when you look at Tyrod Taylor, that shouldn't be any big surprise that Tyrod Taylor will play better than the rookie. Josh Johnson plays better than the rookie. Mike White plays better than the rookie in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, veterans like Tyrod Taylor, he won't panic. He'll recognize when defensive coordinators are trying to do different things to him. He'll be able to get to his progressions quicker. That offense looked pretty okay when Tyrod Taylor was in there. So, yeah, I give him a chance. That's a Miami team that clearly is not in a good headspace mentally, and I don't think the Texans are either, but they had expectations of making the playoffs. The Texans had expectations, or at least we had expectations. They're meeting our expectations.
Right.
Everyone who said they're exactly who we told you they were going to be, and if you thought any different, then shame on you for not just being realistic. This is what they're supposed to look like, a one-win team. And when it's all said and done, they might get to three. They might get to three wins. Wouldn't shock me if they only had two. Tyrod could mess things up. You're right. Tyrod Taylor could mess things up this week for the draft slotting because Miami is not in a good place.
Miami's in a really bad place. But are they in a bad enough place to lose to the Texans? That's the question. Even with Tyrod Taylor, I'm not. This Texans team is. Has Coach Culley lost this team yet? From what we've seen.
I don't think lost the team. Lost the team would mean they don't listen to you. Like Joe Judge may have lost the Giants. I don't know. I don't think David Culley's lost the team. I think the team's just not good. I don't see the team. I don't hear any dissension. I don't hear any, like, no, I don't think so. I just think he's a coach who's overmatched with a team that's overmatched. I think there's a difference.
They're not half-assing it. They're just not very good. They're trying. Well, they're giving it their all. It's just their all is not good enough.
Well, I mean, I don't know. The one thing I would argue with that, Aaron, is that how come they can be competitive one half and in the second half they get the brakes beaten off of them most of the time? Something's going on, and sometimes it's not all just, well, he just made adjustments. Now, coaches will tell you adjustments are overrated. Maybe they're running out of gas. Maybe when the chips get down, they don't fight as hard, which is a natural instinct for some people. I don't know. I think losing a team is a little much because this isn't really a team. I mean, it's a team, but it's not a team that anyone's going to – this team is going to look way different next year too. Last year's team to this year's team looks different. This year's team to next year's team. I watch the Colts do it. It's going to look unbelievably different next year. I would say out of the 22 starters you have, you will probably have a minimum of 14 new starters. That's a lot. 14 out of 22 starters is a lot, but I think you'll have at least 14 new starters. Well, that's high. That's high. But you know what? Max Sharping may be on his last legs as a starter. Justin Britt, I think, signed a one-year deal. You could have a new starter there. Right guard, Tyus Howard, Laremy Tunsil's hurt. You've got Charlie Heck. They'll have a new
Marcus
starter
Cannon,
at right tackle.
You'll
have Marcus Cannon. I don't know that he'll ever play for the Texans. So you could have three new starters on the offensive line. Yeah. A new running back is very, very likely. Very, very likely.
Hopefully. Why won't they give Scotty Phillips a ball? Just try it. What the hell do they have to lose?
He got a couple carries this weekend.
Yeah, well, guess, but just give can't him block. Give a shot.
Lindsey's better than him, and Philip Lindsey can't get anywhere.
I mean, it's terrible. 713-780-3776. Anyway, that's the most.
Oh, my God. Texans and Rockets back-to-back rebuilds. Rebuild radio is tough. Is it how far are we close to being done?
We got Greg Cosell to talk about the NFL.
Okay.
Greg
Cosell. Are we close to being done with the show?
No.
Oh. Not the segment.
We got a lot of stuff going on.
Greg Cosell's up next, but I want to at some point here in the show in the 8 o'clock, as a matter of fact, in the 8 o'clock hour at 8 o'clock, Todd Callis joined the Wheelhouse and he had some interesting comments on the roster composition, and what's going to take place in the offseason. So at 8 o'clock, we'll dig into what Todd Callis said.
Uh-huh. We'll do that at 8. Right now, though, we got to talk about hoop sporting. We're talking basketball, and we talked about the Rockets. And if you want your kid to shoot better than they are, well, all you got to do is get a Hoops Gold. You say, well, I got little kids, and this is perfect for little kids, okay? You've got little kids, you maybe got shorter kids, you got non-athletic kids, you got kids that just aren't going to be able to excel or even enjoy a 10-foot goal. Well, perfect, because you can lower this goal so that the kids can actually enjoy it, so that the kids, your unathletic kid, can actually dunk. Your kid's probably in the car. Your kid's not one of them. I'm talking about the other kids that are unathletic. Your kid's really athletic, but they still will like to have the lower goal. Kids, tell your dad right now, we want one of these goals so that we can actually have fun. When you go to the website and you see what the kids are doing, it's all the kids are dunking. Can your kid dunk on a 10-foot goal? The answer is no. So here's the deal. Go to ProDunkHoops.com and get them the best goal in the history of the world. It's ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting InnovationMap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. To talk some NFL with NFL Film Zone Greg Cosell on the bench from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Erline.
All right, bringing in Greg Cosell, senior producer, NFL Films, NFL analyst for years and years and years, but best in the business at breaking it down and telling you exactly what's going on out there on the field. Greg Cosell rejoins us here. Greg, welcome back. How are you?
John, how are you today?
Doing great, man. So we were just talking about, you know, Zach Wilson is sitting there watching these guys all succeed. He's a rookie, right? He's only played in a few games, so we shouldn't expect too much. But maybe the Jets aren't such a bad, bad team if they get a little quarterback play?
Well, you know, it's always difficult when you see someone like Mike White come in. The Bengals game was a little weird because of how the Bengals chose to play. They basically played all zone coverage, and they gave him those underneath throws. So that game was not a good barometer. I thought last night, before he got hurt, he actually made some good throws, hanging in the pocket, getting late in the down, and going through progressions. That's something Zach Wilson has struggled with. I don't think anybody would say that just in terms of pure physical talent, Mike White has more than Zach Wilson. But, you know, this always happens when you see young quarterbacks struggle and then you see sort of a younger veteran come in whose game is predicated really on the way Mike White plays. That, because he's not a big, strong-armed kid, his game is built more on being able to go through progressions, knowing where to go with the ball, throwing to the right receiver at the right time with the right kind of throw. My guess is they do not have a quarterback controversy in New York.
No, but I'll tell you what. It is interesting that two veterans in Mike White and Josh Jones, and Mike White, I call him a veteran. I mean, he's had very limited experience.
Yeah.
Josh Johnson's been around but hasn't played a ton of football. They come in and throw for four touchdowns and and Josh Johnson did it in three quarters, four touchdowns, three touchdowns, and you watch the struggles of Zach Wilson in the same offense with the same people, and it really speaks to the fact that veterans who have just been around, been in film studies, been through practices, the game slows down for them, even if they aren't as talented. And that's, you know, John and I had that discussion in the second, before you came on, Greg, about Tyrod Taylor. It's going to probably look better with Tyrod Taylor than Davis Mills because he knows what it's supposed to look like. He's just
right. That's a great point. They understand the game. You know, it's funny. I've spoken to a lot of coaches over the years, and I'm sure you have too, Lance. Obviously, when quarterbacks come in and play right away, there's degrees of success and there's degrees of failure. But most coaches will tell you that it takes a good 3-4 years for a quarterback to really understand both his offense and all the nuances of his offense, and then defenses in the NFL and all the subtleties of what defenses do. So even though quarterbacks can come in and have success, it takes a lot of time. That's why changing coaches is such a difficult thing, because when quarterbacks who are young have to start over, it becomes really, really difficult. You know, they could face that. They could face that in Chicago, because Chicago has John DeFilippo as the quarterback coach, and I don't know what you think, Lance, but I think John DeFilippo is one of the best quarterback coaches in the game. And let's say they get rid of the head coach and they start over. Then all of a sudden, Justin Fields is starting over with a new quarterback coach. And then you're sort of starting from scratch, and it could seem like it's a brand new deal, almost as if he's a rookie again.
We got Greg Cosell with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. How are the Titans going to be able to continue to have success without Derek?
Well, all this is speculation, obviously. So the big question, I guess, that is, can they play offense conceptually and philosophically the same way, or do they have to somewhat change the way they play? Now, they're not going to drastically change. They're obviously not going to become a pass-first team where they ask Tannehill to drop back 50 times by choice. But Derrick Henry was far and away the leading rusher in the NFL on first and 10 carries. So the question is that going to stay the same with a combination of Deontay Foreman and Adrian Peterson? Or are they going to maybe try to just change that equation a little bit, be a little more aggressive throwing the ball on first down, when they know what coverage they will get, because coverages tend to be far more predictable on first down. So we'll see. We don't know the answer to that. And I think the game will also dictate that. It will also depend on their defense matching up to the Rams' offense. You know, if all of a sudden it's 17-3 Rams in the second quarter, then the Titans have a different feel to the entire game.
How about Jameis Winston? How about the Saints without Winston?
I guess, who's going to be the starter? Do we know that for a fact?
No. Between the kid from, what's his name, from Northwestern?
Yeah, because Simeon.
Oh, Simeon.
Trevor Simeon,
yeah. Last week. Hill's been a full participant in practice this week.
I know. So. We don't know yet, but I think it's going to be Taysom. But we'll see. I mean, Simeon was okay.
He looked pretty good against the Bucs.
Well, there's no mystery to Simeon. He's the kind of quarterback that is not a high-level talent, but he can run your offense. That's what he is. That's why he'll play in the league for as long as he wants to play in the league, because he'll always be a backup, because he can come in and run your offense. Hill obviously is a little different because you have the quarterback design run game that he gives you that obviously puts more stress and pressure on the defense and forces the defense to have to work through a lot more in practice leading up to the game. And actually, I imagine this will be a difficult week for Atlanta, because they have to prepare for both. So I don't know what Sean Payton will do, but you know, I think he'd probably feel comfortable with either one.
Yeah, that's a very interesting. You know, it's going to be tough. I don't know. Jameis didn't play great, but he didn't make mistakes. He was, you know, he was doing what he had to do, and they were winning some games. I think Tampa Bay is obviously gonna cruise over there. You know what? I was kind of interested to see what would happen, and there was never any buzz about this. But why weren't any teams interested in potentially dealing for Matt Ryan? And I ask that question because he's going to more than likely be a cap casualty after this year.
Right.
I'm surprised the team didn't say, you know what, let's get him as a three-year, let's trade for him, let's get a contract done for him where we can, you know, make the salary cap work out for us. And maybe you don't have that kind of room this year to do that right away, I guess. But I thought that would be an intriguing trade at trade deadline, to bring in a guy like Matt Ryan.
Well, I guess we don't know if teams asked about him, or if they did, it wasn't reported. And maybe the Falcons said, hey, you know, if you want Matt Ryan, we need a first-round pick. And maybe teams said that's out of the question. I don't know. But, you know, Matt Ryan, he's one of those guys. In some ways, he's like Philip Rivers in the sense that he's had a great, great career. But because he hasn't won a Super Bowl, obviously Ryan played in one and played pretty well, actually. But because he hasn't won a Super Bowl, he's really not talked about a lot, but he's really had a great career. And it really started from his first season. I mean, I remember, you may remember this, Lance, his first pass as an NFL quarterback was about a 60-yard touchdown on a skinny post. And I forget who caught it, but that was his first pass in the NFL.
Probably off the play action, because that's what
it was off play action.
Boston College.
You're right.
You remember, he was one of the last ones that I remember where we all said, now this is what an NFL quarterback looks like. He plays under center. He plays in a pro-style offense. And now you don't even have that conversation anymore.
You know, and it's funny you say that. And you know, these are the discussions I love getting into with you guys, you know, sort of the philosophy of football is – obviously, kids growing up now playing quarterback starting at a young age, they're not under center. They're in the gun. It's a lot of 7-on-7. It's spread stuff. It's a whole different way of reading and playing the position. But, you know, sometimes I wonder if the NFL is going to go back a little bit to putting the quarterback under center. I mean, look at some of the issues that some teams are having now. We can debate the Chiefs issues, you know, forever. We could spend the next hour talking about that, and I'm sure you guys have, a lot of people have. And there's many reasons why their offense is not really good right now. But, you know, one of the things is when you put the quarterback in the gun all the time and you have an RPO, a significant RPO element to your offense, to me anyway, and Lance, I'd love to know what your dad thinks about this. You probably know. I don't think RPOs are really a viable NFL run game in a strict sense. And, you know, I think that at some point in this league, you do have to line up and run the ball. Now, that doesn't mean you have to have 40 rushes every week. It doesn't mean that the foundation of your offense must be a run game. But I think at some point, you've got to put your quarterback under center, line up, and run the football.
You know, Greg, it's funny because we have Sage Rosenfels on here for a half hour every Thursday. And he made that point, didn't he? He watches every Bears game. And he breaks it down, and he says Justin Fields would benefit so much more because he'd actually have a play-action game if he was under center.
Yep. And the thing is that would be a good idea for them to do that because, you know, they're back. I guess Montgomery may be back, but Khalil Herbert, who is a player, I really liked his tape coming out of Virginia Tech. In some ways, he reminded me of Tiki Barber. And Tiki Barber did not become a foundation runner in this league until he'd been in the league for 5 or 6 years. But Herbert is a zone runner. Outside zone is his deal. He's very good at it. I think you put him under center, you get all the elements that go with the outside zone run game. You get the play action. You get the play action boot. You get the defensive line moving laterally before they start moving vertically to rush the quarterback. I think that would really help someone like Justin Fields kind of develop a real feel for the overall offense. You know, it sounds like Sage and I agree on that, but I think in general, at some point, you got to line up and put your quarterback under center and run the ball.
I once asked Gary Kubiak about the differences of, you know, when you ran out of the outside zone out of the pistol. And, you know, pistol kind of went away pretty quick. It went from pistol to gun, but pistol is a modified, for those who don't remember or don't know, it's, you're not a full shotgun, you're closer to the quarterback. And I said, how do you run outside zone out of pistol? How does it change it? He just says, well, and it's based on timing. And this is a conversation I had with my dad as well. It's all about the mesh point, what you're doing. And the reason that Justin Fields would benefit and the reason that Vince Young benefited and the reason that so many quarterbacks benefit from that style is that outside zone stuff, there's a certain amount of steps and there's a certain timing that gets with, you know, you force teams to flow out of the pistol. The mesh point happens so much faster that you don't create the flow needed from linebackers to overrun certain lanes or for offensive linemen to get up on the second level. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think that, you know, I think some of that stuff can be done out of pistol. I think you can run out of the gun, but it has to be modified. But under center is the best way to create the type of timing that you need in a running game. And I just don't know that certain offenses, there are just certain offenses that are going to be fundamentally opposed to it because they want their quarterback to be comfortable every snap. And so many of these quarterbacks, Greg, from the time they're young now, are working out of gun.
That's exactly right. And I know you got to go to break for a sec here, but there's another point that could be made on that, which we can make after the break.
All right, we'll do that. Look at Greg.
Greg knows our breaks.
Greg's in break.
I'm trying to help you guys out, you know?
This is a pro's pro. He said, we'll do that after the break. Greg, you want to tease our next segment? What are we talking about next segment? Give us something that we're going to come back with.
Well, we'll play off that. I got a point that I think is a good one that relates to what you just said. I want to play off the host, you know.
It's a pro,
you know,
pro that, right
that's
here.
Good radio, you know.
He's more professional than we've ever been. Actually hitting a break on time. It's 7:42 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, and it's time to talk about Chastang Ford and my people over at Chastang Ford and deals that you're not getting elsewhere and add-ons that don't exist at Chastang Ford while they exist at the other places. I'm telling you, they're not. There's a rebate right now of $1,000 on select Ford F-150s, and guess what? You're not getting those at other dealerships. You know what else you're not getting? 72 months interest free at other dealerships. You know what you are getting at other dealerships? You're getting add-ons like $5,000 or $10,000 because the car industry is so difficult right now, and that's not happening at Chastain Ford. That'll never happen at Chastain Ford. And oh, by the way, what else you can do at Chastain Ford that you can't do at the other places is you can actually do the whole deal online, because they don't have to. They don't have to have you into the dealership so that they can throw a bunch of add-ons onto your vehicle. But the other dealerships, that's exactly what they do. They won't let you buy the car or the truck online. Chastain Ford will. Matter of fact, they'll have a salesperson come out to your house if that's what you want. They will actually visit you. They will actually deliver the car to you. You never have to leave the house to buy a car or truck at Chastain Ford. It's all at ChastainFord.com or on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead. It's just 5 minutes from downtown. It's Chastain Ford.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
Time to talk some NFL with NFL Film Zone Greg Cosell on The Bench from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Erline.
All right, welcome back. Greg Cosell with us for a second segment here. Hit the break on time, so we got a little bit more time to spend with Greg Cosell here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. He's weekly, and it is good stuff. Greg, when last we left you, okay, make your point about what Lance was saying.
I was just going to play off what Lance said, because I've talked to quarterbacks, and one of the things that they pretty much all agree on is you develop much more rhythm with your drop, your set, and your throw under center. So that's another reason I think under center works, because quarterbacks develop that feel much better than they do in the gun. The gun does not really have the same kind of drop and set as under center. So that was just a point I wanted to make, because I think it plays off the idea of putting the quarterback under center and having that kind of run game. I think the play-action pass game and the quarterback's comfort with it all is just at a higher level.
Now, the advantage of shotgun is the quarterback doesn't have to turn. He can watch. He can maybe keep his eye on the safeties all the whole time. So, there are advantages and disadvantages in both.
Sure, and there's no question that turning your back to the defense and then snapping your head around is a learned trait. You have to do that over and over with repetition, because obviously the defense is not in the same place after you snap your head around as they were before you turned your head to the back to the defense. So, you know, it's a combination for sure.
Are the Chiefs the luckiest team in the league this week? Aaron Rodgers not there?
You know, it's funny. I think when you're not, and again, I guess the Chiefs, because they have talent, any week could all of a sudden be the Chiefs that most people think they are. But when you're not playing well, I think that it doesn't really matter who you're playing. And by the way, the Packers do not have a bad defense. We'll see. I mean, I think if the Chiefs' offense is not working well, in other words, if they're playing the way they have been playing, you're going to see the Packers come out, run the ball. You'll get a combination of A.J. Dillon, you'll get Aaron Jones, and they'll run the ball, and they'll take a shot here and there in normal down-and-distance situations when they can be proactive and control the kind of shot they want to take. So we'll see. You know, look, the Chiefs struggled to score 20 last week against the Giants, D.
Yeah, no question. They struggled all year.
You know, I think the Chiefs are an interesting case study, because I think that some of it is, I think some of it has to do, you know, Travis Kelce has just not been a factor here recently. And some of it you could point to, okay, well, everyone's running the shell coverage. Or I guess you're the best person to talk to about that. And we'll let you speak on that in a second. But how coverages have changed, I think there's a chance that obviously the quarterback has just kind of lost some of his confidence. The running game has not been able to get going. But Greg, how much of this is that the Chiefs have had a level of success, and this is kind of a natural hangover that happens to a lot of teams? I mean, it's obviously not just one thing,
yeah,
but a series of things that are happening with them.
And that's the point. I mean, you can't – look – we've heard a lot in the last couple of weeks about Patrick Mahomes' mechanics. Patrick Mahomes' mechanics have never been good. You know that, Lance. This is the way he plays. When he was playing great football, his mechanics weren't very good. So I think we have to put that aside. So I think there's a number of elements to this. Mahomes clearly is not playing well, okay? He's not playing with a calm helmet. He's not seeing things within the structure, the order, the purpose, or the progressions. There's too much unnecessary movement. But here's what I will say based on film study. Defenses, particularly in zone, are doing a much better job of matching routes. Okay, the coaches coach. You know, there are a lot of good coaches in this league. And they are teams are playing more two-man coverage. And in two-man coverage, you can get up in the face of receivers, particularly Kelce, and you can jam them off the ball because you have safety help over the top. So teams are playing them a little bit differently, and with Mahomes not playing well, and again, it gets back to the run game. They don't really have a viable run game. Most teams, when they're struggling on offense, throughout the history of the league, when they're struggling on offense, how do they develop and get back to some continuity and stability on offense? They run the ball. When you're not playing well on offense, no coach, Lance, and you know this, says, okay, to get back to what we do, let's just start tossing the ball all around the yard. So they don't really get back to a run game. And I'm talking about a real run game, not an RPO run game, not a gimmicky run game. They don't really line up and run the ball.
It's just, John and I talked about this when Brandon Staley had his comments. It is, it's not Brandon Staley, yeah, Brandon Staley.
Well, Staley had those comments about the run game and about
it was
beautiful. Element being real, yeah. And it means something.
It was beautiful, but exactly. What the point he made and that John and I talked about was that, you know, in this day and age, like you listen to my kids, and I think a lot of people are Madden, are John Madden video game type players, where you want every play to be an explosive play. They want every play to be an explosive play, and I don't think there is a recognition of the aggregate of the running game being something that breaks the will of the other team. Like there is, I'm not sure one is right over the other one, because Greg, there's no doubt that explosive plays can bury another team very, very quickly. So can it be both? Can't you have a team that treats it like a war or a boxing match with body blows, and another team that says, we're just going to, you know, we're going to be Marvin Hagler. Right, and that's our style with the running game and the body work, and the other team is going to be just to go old 80s welterweights, Sugar Ray Leonard, and be more flash and style.
So one team wants to be Hagler Hearns and go three rounds and just have to be whatever happens, right. And the other wants to make it, you know, the sweet science.
Right, exactly, exactly.
But, you know, it's not just a matter of breaking the will. What the run game does for you is you get to see, as you run the ball, how the defense responds. That's what coaches up in the booth do. They see how the defense responds. So if you line up and run the ball, you see, okay, that's safety now. He's going to line up over here. Or, hey, look at that corner. He's kind of peeking in the backfield, you know, if he's the boundary corner, because he's got to get involved and run support. You know, they see these things as the game develops. And then you can see, set up those explosive plays. See, there's multiple ways to get explosive plays. I think a lot of people think, guys, that you just get explosive plays, you know, put the quarterback in the gun, go 2x2, 3x1, go empty, and toss it all around. And that's the way you get explosive plays. There's many ways to get explosive plays, and you can use the run game very effectively to set up explosive plays.
Well, you got Greg Cosell with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Heard a lot of people this week saying that, you know, Odell is probably right in that Kevin Stefanski's his offense does not feature him. That it's a progression that they, you know, that Baker's going through his progressions. Even though Odell is open, he wasn't in, you know, the primary receiver.
Right.
Is that correct?
Well, I think those style of offenses. It's the Stefanski offense. They run the same thing in Minnesota. Theoretically, it's the Kyle Shanahan. Theoretically, it's Sean McVay. I don't think those offenses start out by saying, you know what, today we're going to start our offense because we're going to get the ball to this guy. I don't think that's the way those offenses are structured. Now, you can debate whether that's good or bad, and you can debate whether Odell Beckham, at his best, is a great, you know, receiver and therefore should be featured. That's a different question. But in that particular offense, he's not going to be featured in terms of, hey, we got to make sure in the first quarter we get him five targets. They're not going to think like that. That is purely every offense is a system offense because that's the way it's taught, obviously. But that offense is truly a system offense in the sense that it's the scheme that dictates how you go about doing things, not, hey, let's get the ball to this guy and make sure that we get him involved early.
Well, is that the best way to go about it when you have, like, suppose you, like Tom Brady, if he's got a mismatch, Boy, is he going to take advantage of that? Does this offense let the quarterback take advantage of mismatches?
I think there's pros and cons, John. I think that's, you know, I think there's multiple ways to do it. Obviously, if you feel there's a major mismatch, maybe you want to make an adjustment and say, you know what, instead of just running our system, you know, we're gonna see that, hey, we have a mismatch here, and we'd like to take advantage of that on this, you know, here and there. You know, so there's pros and cons to it. You know, I think that there are times when those offenses, whether it's the Browns, whether it's the Vikings, where if the run game is not working effectively, because those teams don't have to establish the run. The run's already established just by the nature of the way they play. They don't have to go into a given game and say, oh, we better run the ball. The defense knows they're running the ball, so they prepare for that. But I think sometimes in those games, when if your run game gets stopped and you get stuck in a lot of long yardage, then it gets tougher. So your point's a good one. I mean, like I said, I think there's pros and cons.
Greg Cosell from NFL Films is our guest every Friday from 7:30 to 8, and we always appreciate getting into. Last question, just a quick one, got about a minute. How much of a difference do you think Von Miller is going to make on that defense with the Rams?
It's going to be fascinating because, obviously, you know, they've got Leonard Floyd, who a lot of people don't talk about because of Aaron Donald, and Floyd's played very, very well, and he's at his best lining up on the left side of the defense. So I'm curious to see how they use Von Miller. They obviously have now three very, very good pass rushers in Donald, Miller, and Floyd. It's going to be fascinating for Raheem Morris and how he uses them, but he will be used. I would imagine this week he'll only play about 25 snaps, but I would think as time goes on, assuming health, he'll play 40-50 snaps. It's going to be tough for offenses because they may have to start keeping people in to help protect, and then you limit the number of eligible receivers.
Greg Cosell every week right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Greg, man, we appreciate it. As always, thanks for and our boss thanks you for hitting the break.
Oh, and this was fun, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
There's Greg Cosell here on ESPN 97. You don't hear him elsewhere. You hear him right here. And you know what? We don't need HR on Greg Cosell, that's for sure. We would never need HR on Greg Cosell because Greg Cosell hits breaks as opposed to somebody to my left. But here's the deal. I don't even think Lance has been – I don't know. Have you ever had HR issues here?
No, I had to apologize to somebody nationally.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
I don't know if it was HR, but I got called into an office.
How about I've got zero HR – what were the odds of that I have zero HR issues here? Well, you know,
you had a text.
I've had a text.
You had a recent text.
Cease and desist. I've had that. I've had a couple.
I don't know
if
that's an HR issue. You haven't had internal issues that we know of.
No, but you know what? When we have HR issues, we got HRMP because we don't want to screw it up. And that's the truth. If you screw up an HR issue, guess what? You can be in some trouble. Your business could be in some trouble. There have been plenty of issues that along the way for different businesses where they messed up an HR issue and it cost them. So don't do this yourself. If you don't have an HR company, we got one for you, HRMP. And oh, by the way, the payroll is awesome too. If you're looking for the best way, it's taxes, it's payroll, it's HR, they'll help you with your benefits packages, but they won't sell them to you because that's not what they do. What they do is HR and payroll. And if you're looking for the company that we think is the best, has been with us now for years, it's HRMP. 281-880-6525 or HRP.net.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims. And you're listening to ESPN 97.5.